SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again?
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welsh.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour 3 of In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. I'm Scott Bogman. On the Twitter, at Bogman Sports. Hour 3, you guys know what that means. I'm here with my friend, Casey Bubba, at BDNTrick on the Twitter machine. Bubba, what is going on, my man?
Not much, friendo. Great to chat with you again. It feels like, you know, only once a week now. It's really getting boring.
I know.
But, good stuff. Hopefully we talk longer than most MLB negotiations, but we're here. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah, I was going to say something about loveless marriages, and MLB and MLBPA is definitely one of them for sure. But look, you know, we usually open up this show talking about golf because you like golf. I'm not the biggest golf fan. So what I like to say is let's get it out of the way. Let's get it off the top here. But we have a little news here because Phil Mickelson has made some unfortunate news recently. So can you explain that and what is going on with it? Because, you know, in terms of golf, I am all the way completely out of the loop. All I know is that people are pissed.
Don't worry, I got you on this one, Boggs. This is what you keep me around for. Phil Mickelson, for those that don't know, very popular in golf, thanks to Tiger Woods. He's like the second most noticeable person outside of Tiger Woods.
I know who Phil Mickelson is, at least.
We used to call him Hefty because he had man boobs. He's lost those. Now he's just Lefty. But he's a very talkative person. He's taken to social media in recent years. He's hilarious. He interacts with fans and stuff. Awesome dude. Like when they put him up behind the mic in the broadcast booth, everybody that likes golf has said, we'd love him there like full time. He's awesome. Like when they had the match, Brooks Koepka versus Bryson, he was with Charles Barkley on set. Like he was that good. So he's really, really good. But what happens in life when you talk a lot, and it's amazing you and I haven't done this more, is you stick your foot in your mouth.
Yeah.
It's just what happens. It's just the natural reaction of life. And he did that. And apparently there's a book coming out that I was already looking forward to reading before I saw the excerpts that started this. And now I'm really looking forward to it, but hopefully it's not like a preview of a movie. Now I know what happens already, but he's got Alan Shipnick's a very, very popular writer for PGA Tour. And he wrote a book with Phil. And apparently there are some comments that were in the book that now Phil realizes aren't good comments. And now is saying they're off the records, but there's this Saudi league starting up led by Greg Norman, former PGA pro. And it's like the best of the best, makes millions of dollars, like 40-man field. So everyone's guaranteed money. I was like 12 tournaments, like 8 in the U.S., 2 over like in Asia and 2 in Saudi Arabia or something. But, you know, there's lots to be a lot of consequences when getting associated with the Saudis just in general. There's been a tournament a few weeks ago, a PGA Tour or a Euro Tour event in Saudi Arabia that some of the pros went to and didn't get met with open arms. But it's a money grab because the Saudis have tons of money.
Right.
And they pay for these guys to come here. That's what it's all about. So Phil is one of the guys that was going to be like the lead face going to this. And the PGA Tour said, if you go to the Saudi Tour, you're blackballed for the rest of your life for the PGA Tour. You can't go. So it's been very, very problematic the last a couple months since it's kind of getting closer to actually happening. Well, events this past weekend kind of blew that thing up. It looks like it's probably not happening because a lot of the big young players, the John Rahms, the Morikawas, the McIlroys, they all said, screw this. We have a legacy to uphold. We're here to like follow Tiger and Jack Nicklaus and all these guys. And Phil's still standing ground. Phil's the ringleader here. And then in this book with Shipnick, there's some quotes where Phil talks about how scary the Saudis are, how they kill people, how they all these things, which in reality, true, he didn't lie.
Yeesh.
But said a lot of bad things, and he said a lot of bad things about PGA Tour lately. He talked about how they don't respect the players, they hoard all the money, and all these things. Like he stuck his foot in both ends, basically.
Yeah, he did.
Like he's got his left hand.
I mean, they're sticking your foot in your mouth, making an off-color joke, or making a bad statement in a bad, but I mean, do it on both ends.
Yeah.
Not very smart, man.
Yeah, he took PGA off first, which made everybody go, okay, he's definitely going to Saudi now. He's going to get the money. He's already 50. Like he's just kind of cashing in and calling it good. And then he bit the other hand that was about to feed him. And so he's basically stuck in no man's land, and everyone's like, okay, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? And as Bogman said, I retweeted it, and a lot of people did on Monday. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. He came out with it was a two-picture apology about everything he said, all these different things, blah, blah, blah. And all I quote tweeted was, there it is, because he knew it was coming. Like, he's going to backtrack everything. And that's when he told Alan, he said it was an off-the-record comment. Well, if you go read Alan Shipnuck's Twitter profile, he's furious, and every other PGA writer's on his side. So that's pissing people off. But we're almost out of time. I only want to talk about this all day because I really could. It's a lot of fascinating stuff. But the really, really fun part about this is, besides Phil kind of getting blackballed everywhere right now, he's probably he says he's taking a mental break from golf, so we're not going to see him for a bit. KPMG is one of his biggest sponsors. I really don't even, I think they're just like a marketing firm or a retirement fund place. I have no idea. Massive, massive company. If you Google them, you know who they are. They dropped Phil.
Eek.
And many thought it was because of, they didn't know, they thought it was more for his comments, which it kind of was. But you dig some, do some more research. Four of their biggest offices, can you guess where they're located, Boggs?
Are they in Saudi Arabia?
Bingo.
Yeesh.
So they had to separate themselves from Phil to keep
that's
making money
for them. I mean, that's a crazy amount of stuff. Like, I thought, okay, he made some dumb comment.
That's why I said I could talk for a long time on this. There's a lot going on.
And I mean, honestly, I think, you know, going away for a little bit is probably his best strategy here, you know. But like you said, I didn't know it went that deep. I didn't know it went to, okay, he pissed off the Saudis and the PGA.
Oh, there's a long list of people that want a piece of Phil right now.
Getting in line that want a piece of Phil right now. But we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll move over to much better conversation of MLB, MLB and arguing with MLBPA. That's a lot of fun. And the lockout. So stick with us. We'll be right back after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you
be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more? Let me tell you something about
In This League.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour 3 of In This League on the Sports Grid. Get on the grid. Please check out our Patreon. Patreon.com/army, where we got all kinds of great stuff for you. We got GroupMe rooms going there. We got secret shows, live streams, ranks, all kinds of great stuff. So please check that out. If you would, inthisleague.com or patreon.com/ITL Army will take you there. Now, Bub, from one fun subject of Phil Mickelson, you know, angering the entire golf world and his sponsors and a lot of people, to another situation that's not particularly great. MLB and MLBPA trying to work on this lockout right now. They're meeting every day at this point. We're recording this a little bit earlier this week on a Wednesday, so nothing has been done quite yet. They're coming together a little bit more than I think a lot of people thought, though, so you have to give them a little credit, both sides, for giving a little and making it work. But, you know, we're approaching this and the deadline is real close, and it just still doesn't seem like we're going to get done on time to start our season on time, which is why I haven't booked anything for Arizona yet still. Do you think that we're going to get a solution by the 28th? Are you still holding out hope, or is this kind of a, look, we're going to miss a little bit of time here going into the regular season and we just need to face that? What do you think is going to happen?
On Monday, I would have said, yes, we're going to have an agreement by the 28th. I'm starting to get a little, not as optimistic.
Every day
one.
We get closer, the optimism drops. I understand.
Because each day it's like they're barely budging on stuff. And like I told you during the break, is the most important bargaining piece is the CBT, and they're not even talking about that. It feels like maybe they are, they're just not reporting on it, because they report on everything else except no one ever reports on the CBT, which is the collective bargaining like trust or something like that. And that's like the most important piece of this puzzle, and they haven't approached you yet. So I'm getting nervous. At the same time, I know the 28th was the date. I'm not worried about that yet. I could see them, even if it's a week later, being like, these guys don't care if they have 3 weeks of spring training. They're all training right now. Like, these guys, we said this during the 2020
they're not
thing.
Playing games. They're not organized.
Yeah, we all said this about the 2020, done. And they're actually showing it, like, on their Instagrams and stuff. These dudes are at facilities. Like, all the Boris clients are in Florida or Arizona, and they've showed them hitting batting practice every day and stuff. Like, these guys will be ready to play. That's not the hard part. But it's getting it all put together. And you'd have to imagine that's what we saw in 2022. Even if, it gets started later, they'll just add double headers. They'll get 162 games. They're going to do it. Unless it's like really bad, they're still going to do it. So I'm optimistic we still get like at least 140 plus. Like, I'm there. But it's really sad. And the biggest thing is, like, yeah, it's great they're still like meeting and everything. But why did it take till now to start meeting every day? We went like 5 weeks without meeting and stuff. Like, what the heck are we doing?
I know, man. It's just both sides are ridiculous here, you know. And this is
Jim Bowden.
Well, okay. The bottom line on this, we're going to talk about him in a second. But the bottom line on this is, for regular people, you know, the outside looking in, it is millionaires squabbling with billionaires. And I understand it's a business and this stuff has to be worked out and it's a big deal. But baseball is not doing itself any favors by putting us through this, because the average age of the baseball consumer is 57 years old and getting older every single year. You know, baseball is getting phased out in this country. The NFL is absolute king. The NBA has blown past Major League Baseball right now. So baseball is third and sinking. Soccer is picking up. Hockey is gaining traction again. So we just had the Olympics. Golf. Yeah.
I shocked you when I told you a few weeks ago that behind the NFL for DFS, FanDuel and everything, it's golf.
And I was shocked. Golf is right. And I know NASCAR gets a lot of DFS stuff too. People love
that. Tells you a lot about who's like, cause if you're playing DFS, you're probably tuning in some point in time.
Right.
So it says a lot.
It says a lot, dude. So,
but before we go to that next deal real quick, okay, I want to mention one thing. I said the CBT is what they're $31 million apart from as of Wednesday afternoon, which really, like we both said, is not a lot in the grand scheme of things.
That's like a little over $1 million per owner.
But what the players are doing, which I think obviously gets lost in the weeds and will be a great transition to where we're about to go, is they're fighting for the little man. They're fighting for minor leaguers. Like, they're $135,000 apart on minimum salary, and they're fighting for every inch of that. Like, they're fighting for those things that, again, shouldn't mean much to an owner at all.
Right.
But that's what they're fighting for. I guarantee you, if they started getting some of those pieces, that CBT be figured out pretty quick. Right. I have a hunch, because they're just trying to get guys to arbitration quicker. They're trying all these things that the owners are like, nope. I'm like, well, then screw you, basically. So that's one thing I think gets lost in a lot of this. They're fighting for the minor leaguers because they actually have a voice, unlike the minor leaguers. So,
and the Jim Bowden takes. Jim Bowden has gotten a lot of heat because he worked for The Athletic. He put out an article about how the players should give in on a couple of things. Look, I'm not saying that Jim Bowden's article has no point, right? I think the point that he said, well, you look, the owners offered federal mediation. I think that could have done a little something. I don't know if it would have fixed this problem, but I think it could have done something. So I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, the guy is completely without merit and everything he says is stupid, but it's a real bad look. And people are rolling their eyes and going, I mean, who is paying you, you know? So it just looks really weird for him. It looks weird for anyone that's not a billionaire to take up with the owners. You know what I mean? It's just a little strange. I don't think that the players are being absolutely unreasonable here. So unless they're being absolutely unreasonable, I get it. But I don't know, man. I'm trying to find something good for him, but I really can't. Speaking of putting your foot in your mouth, it's not quite as bad as Phil, but it's not a good look.
Yeah, I wouldn't keep trying to look for anything, Boggs. He's an idiot. That's the bottom line. He's because for those that don't know who he is, he's worked most of his life in an MLB front office. He's been a general manager. He's been all those things. Got fired a few times. Must be good at it. Must be darn good at it. That's why he's writing at The Athletic and at Fantasy Alarm. So he's
good enough to get canned, right?
Yeah, he's something special. But it's like the worst part about it is he comes out with these fluff pieces because he is an owner's fluffer. That he comes out with them after the MLB players propose something, never when the owners propose something. So he is the mouthpiece. There's been some great tweets about it from people that
look who wants another job, you know,
pretty much like some people, like, they're not going to hire you no matter what you write. You can stop. Like, so he's a piece of work. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. I mean, that is just, it's just crazy nonsense.
Bob Nightingale's had better takes so far during the lockout.
Wow. I mean, that's something. If you guys don't know who Bob Nightingale is, he's a guy that constantly tweets the wrong news. So listening to Bob Nightingale tweets is kind of like reading The Onion. I feel like sometimes I think Welsh compared Bowden to The Onion today as well. So it's almost comical, but I mean, I don't know. I think that I'm going to have optimism. I'm going to say by Monday we have a deal.
I think it's a lot closer than we think. I think when rubber meets the road, they're going to have to, because both sides realize that they can't miss games after what we saw a few years ago.
Right.
So I think there's going to be a lot of they're trying to hold strong as long as possible type thing. And eventually there's only so much bubble gum to hold the dam together.
Right. You know, what's funny is I think a better article than any of these ones that we've seen from Bowden. I saw one, and I can't remember who wrote it, but it was interviewing all high school and elementary kids that watch baseball and ask them how they watch it, why they watch it, who their favorite players are, and what they would like to see change. I think that is smarter. That is a smarter article than these guys. That'd should be do a great this. Article. These guys should do that. I mean, just think about the future of your game and the fact that if these kids are not going to be able to watch it this year, or even maybe punch out because they're tired of waiting. You know, we saw too many people punch out during the pandemic. It's so bad for the game. Get it figured out. Don't miss any games and let's go. They're already giving refunds on spring training tickets. So let's hope it doesn't get much further than that. But when we come back, we'll be talking about some fantasy baseball because Bubba is in the Rad Slam right now. We'll talk about his strategy and if he'll ever draft a starting pitcher. So stick with us. We'll be right back after this in This League on the Sports Grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Chris Welsh
said you were coming.
What else did he say?
He said you were the best in the parsec.
Scott Bogman,
former Imperial sharpshooter.
That's not saying much.
I wasn't a stormtrooper, wise ass.
Please excuse his lack of decorum.
In This League.
This is the way. Stop touching things.
Welcome back, everybody. In This League on the Sports Grid, get on the grid. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. Follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports. Hour three here with KC Bubba. Bubba, tell everybody where they can find all your great stuff and things and work across the internet.
As you said, BDNTrick on the Twitter. I get the Benched with Bubba podcast coming at you a few times a week to get you ready for what will be the 2022 fantasy baseball season. As Bogman said, we will have a deal by Monday. Write it down. So that means we have a season coming up. So get your fantasy baseball info there after you, of course, list to In This League, naturally. But my written content, Fantasy Degens, get your rankings there. Rotoballer.com for some season-long and some DFS content. FantraxHQ.com for some more season-long content. And now FantasyPros.com for more content there. And then last but not least, the Fantasy Black Book to get you ready for the 2022 season. I did catchers and first base. There's about 9 of us to put together that book. Great content, 10th edition of that book. So make sure you check it out and get ready for a fun, fun season ahead.
So much fun. Now you're in the Raz Slam. Welsh is in it too. It's a best ball. It's a points league. It's a little different strategy than normal. So why don't you kind of lay the groundwork and tell us what are the slight differences in the Raz Slam versus a normal points best ball league?
Well, the difference is plate appearances are king. Multi-position eligibility is king, because like Fantrax best ball, you don't get multi-position eligibility.
Where you just get one spot. Yeah.
Where in NFBC you do. So that's big. When you actually like break down the scoring, the hitters have so many past the points compared to pitchers. Like you got to get the wins. You got to get, but not just wins. Sometimes it's just any outs count as points and all these things. And as hard as wins are these days, it makes, you know, pitchers not as different. Like if you look at total points last year, like the higher scoring outside of like the top like four pitchers or whatever, the most of them are like scoring the same amount of points as like Jazz Chisholm, maybe a little more than Jazz Chisholm, stuff like that. So you can play around with that. You want to get lock in those everyday at bats from studs. So if you've heard of the NFBC cut line, it's a 10 team best ball, $75,000 prize up top. I had one of the best cut line players on my Bench with Bubba show a few weeks back, and he was previewing his strategy and everything. And sometimes he takes pitchers early, but most of the time he waits till later and just loads up on a lot of dudes later just to accumulate innings. Because the beauty of best ball also is assuming that all your pitchers don't trunk slam, they pick your best starts that week. So you're good to go. Like you don't have to worry about sitting it and forgetting it. So it makes life easy in that regard. So get those at bats, get that flexibility, and then build from there. I'm 8 rounds in with no pitchers. I was telling Bogman beforehand, the guy next to me hadn't drafted a pitcher yet. There's one other guy that hasn't, but the guy next to me literally just drafted his pitcher. So he weakened to the masses. But like I'll start taking pitching pretty soon. The other strategy before we get into players is relief pitchers are basically useless. Unless they get multiple saves a week, which is so hard to predict. So you'll see some relief pitchers go. Some go early. Like Liam Hendricks still scored more than a lot of starting pitchers last year. So he'll go early, some of those big dogs. But after the first few, there's really like we're in round 8, and Hader and Hendricks went at the 5-6 turn, and no other relievers have been taking it.
More than Jazz Chisholm is what Liam Hendricks scored. So that's nice.
There you go. And Jazz is my dude. For anybody that's listening to any of my content.
I love Jazz. Yeah, but Jack, in a points league, it's just different. You want power. Yep.
Yeah, and you don't care about steals like you do in a roto league because you just want the points. So it's like Jazz is like I passed on him the last 2 rounds. I've looked at him. I'm like, I just took Jared Walsh over Jazz Chisholm. That's just the way it's going to go. So
I love the start of your draft here, specifically for taking no pitchers at all. You start out, what number pick did you have here, Bob?
I have 6th out of 12, and the fact that this individual fell to me at 6. He's my favorite fantasy player this season. He's my number 1.1, and I know it's a different format, so that's why guys went a little differently here. Because in theory, it's like OBP in power is what you want.
Yeah.
But the fact he fell to me over the moon.
Trey Turner to the 6th spot.
And right,
were people
quick, right
taking those high-end pitchers because they score so many points? Is that what it was?
No, Cole went 11, but the guy right before me, who's been my nemesis this draft, I was hoping Shohei Ohtani would fall to me because this is the perfect format for the unicorn.
Yeah.
If he has a great pitching week, you use him there. If he hits well instead of pitches, you use him there. So you never have to decide. It is the best time to use Shohei. He is the legit unicorn in this format. But no, it went Vlad, Tatis, Soto, J-Ram, Ohtani before it got to Turner.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, I'd be a little annoyed that Ohtani didn't fall one more spot.
Yeah, I know. I was hoping he would. And then I was like,
Trey Turner, pretty good consolation prize there for sure. So I like that. Then you went in the 2nd round with Aaron Judge, bought up by Paul Goldschmidt, Byron Buxton, Wilson Contreras, Yasmani Grandal, DJ LeMahieu, and Jared Walsh. So you got both your catchers. You're set there. I'm interested because it's best ball. Are you more willing to take injury prone players? I mean, Aaron Judge, you know, he didn't miss much time last year, but he was always achy. It seemed like Booney was always answering a question about is Judge going to play this week or is he going to have the world take it by ear? You know, it was a lot of that. And then you have Byron Buxton, who is a great talent, but loves the injured list more than I love cheeseburgers. So it's a little bit surprising there. But are you more willing to take those injury prone players in a best ball because you're going 50 rounds, you're going to have backups, and it's just you know, autofill if these guys do get hurt? Are you more willing or less willing because, you know, you can't pick up guys off the wire in this format?
I'll take a few more chances. Like Buxton, I definitely would take a chance more so in this league than the other. Judge stayed healthy last year, and I know he's had issues being healthy, but what he did to stay healthy last year before the year started, I think can carry over with, like, he did all his yoga and stuff with, instead of lifting weights, which I think was huge for him. And he was one of the highest point scorers last year because we know what Judge can do when he's healthy. And Buxton was on his way to doing that. So I'll take my chances with a guy like Buxton. I know it's risky having both of them, but it's like, it was like between Buxton or Cedric Mullins. I think Buxton has the higher ceiling. I think Mullins regresses. So that's me. But it's the fun part about doing some of these best ball drafts because I've been so locked into Roto redraft 5x5 that it's a nice change of pace to kind of mix things up.
And Bub, I think you set the curb sometimes on these guys. I remember particularly Whit Merrifield. Yeah. I believe you're taking him on the turn when like right around his breakout time, right?
Yep. I had my number one second baseman, and everybody thought that was crazy. And yeah, he might not have been number one, but he was definitely worth way more than people thought he was. So
I love him, dude. I love Whit Merrifield. He's so much fun to watch. So are any of these picks? Well, let me just ask you this. Do you have any regrets of not taking a pitcher right now?
No, I do not. And the reason why is, besides just getting the at-bats early, I could have taken pitchers like where I got the two catchers. But with best ball formats, if you look at the replacement value after like the top, say, seven or eight catchers, maybe five or six catchers, it's disgusting. Bad. So yeah, it's bad. Like in this format, Salvador Perez has an ADP of like 17. Some of these guys go super early because of what that brings to your 17. Team it seems high, but if you like think about it in the grand scheme of things, it's like our buddy,
that, but you just said plate appearances are king, and there's no catcher that should have more plate appearances.
Exactly. And because with all the platooning at catcher and everything, it's just tremendous. Chris Clegg, a good buddy of ours, he wrote an awesome article recently. Go check it out on his Twitter that broke down the, I guess, replacement value or round by round value decrease in price or what you get out of each position. And the catcher's one's very, very, like, we all know it, but when he puts the numbers there, it's very telling, very telling. So yeah, I went the catchers there, and then I could have gone pitcher, but I went DJ LeMahieu. He's three position eligibility. It's tremendous in this format. So I think he's due for a bounce back. He was hurt all last year. So that's kind of where I'm at there.
We've talked about LeMahieu a couple times because he's one of the biggest discrepancies in terms of projections. You know, I'm not the biggest projections guy, but it's a tool in the tool bag, right? You should be using it for sure. You know, you don't have to use it to hammer. You don't have to use it to screw. You don't have to use it to nail, right? But you, when it is appropriate, you do use it. And I do like looking at projections, but they've had different, I think, it was 10, 13, and 17 homers for him. And it's like, well, if he hits 17, he's worth it. But if he hits 10, I mean, that's a bench player for you. So a lot of discrepancies about LeMahieu. But was there any point in this draft that you got absolutely sniped and you were angry?
I don't think so yet. The Ohtani one kind of was, as much as I love Trey Turner. I was like, he's going to fall to me. It's going to happen. So that was going to be pretty cool. But you know, otherwise, when I got my second catcher, Grandal, who I love, Varsho was my first pick. He went right before me. Don't really consider that too much of a sniping, though. So nothing yet. It's early. That's going to start pretty soon, probably. Because I have two pitchers circled. I'm eight picks away, and I have two pitchers circled, and I could see some sniping taking place.
This is going to come out way after you have made these picks. So if you are going to wait on pitching and you're taking pitching in this area, of course, once again, this is a different style points league. So this isn't something you're going to do in every single strategy. But who are some of the pitchers you're targeting in this middle range here?
I'm looking at Chris Sale and Max Fried. Those are my two top targets right now. I'm a huge
Max Fried
fan.
I can't believe Chris Sale's still on the board. What round are you in?
I was shocked. It's round 10, but again, people are skipping pitchers. So it's like, it's 1, 2, 3, 5, 6. There's about 14, 15 pitchers that have been taken before Chris Sale.
Yeah, I mean,
you should have got in, Boggs.
Yeah, I mean, I did too many leagues already. So I'm trying to.
You don't have to worry about this one afterwards.
That's true. You're trying to ratchet it back, but it's also draft season, which we are going to be talking about coming up after this break. So after this break, we'll be talking about the scouting combine. I'm not the biggest fan of the combine. I know that you guys that have been listening to me for a
glorified
while.
Glorified dog and pony show.
It's exactly what it is. know that, but I will explain why, but also what I'm looking for in the combine when we come back after this break. So stick with us. It's In This League on the Sports Grid with some combine talk after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. After that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Would you be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more?
Let me tell you something about
In This League.
Welcome back, everybody. In This League on the Sports Grid, get on the grid. I'm your host, Scott Bogman. Follow me on the Twitter at Bogman Sports, joined by Casey Bubba at BDMTrick on the Twitter machine. And we're going to talk about the combine here. And the combine has a lot of useful information in it. I'm not going to sit here and disparage the entire process. I do think it is completely overrated in most people's eyes. I think the things that I like in the combine are the interview process, number one, and hearing the weirdness. First of all, some guy for some team is going to ask a terrible question to one of these guys, and it's going to come out. It's going to be something that is inappropriate or awful, and we're going to hear about it, and there's going to be some kind of goofy, funny reaction, I feel like. Sometimes it's bad. Hopefully it's not that. I don't want anything, you know, mean or, just completely off color to happen in those, but they're going to ask something crazy, you know? So I like that. The rumors of what teams are talking to who or what position a lot, that's the biggest thing for me. So hearing names tied to teams, this is really where we start to hear that. Got a little bit at the Senior Bowl, Shrine Bowl, but more of that was, you know, I think the biggest rumor that came out of the Steelers attached to Malik Willis, which they're not going to be picking high enough, and I highly doubt that they trade up to get Malik Willis unless it's five or fewer spots. So he would have to fall to 15. I don't think he will. I know a lot of mock drafts have him going after that. I think my most recent one, I had him going after that. But I just don't think he's going to fall. I think he's going to show off traits here at this combine. Bub, when you look at the combine, you know, it's the underwear Olympics. It's the glorified dog and pony show, all that stuff. What do you like about it? Is there a drill? Is there anything that comes out of it that you enjoy? Or is this just a, all right, we're going to get their numbers and I'm not going to watch it because it's a bunch of dudes running around in their underwear?
Yeah, like the 40 yard, I guess, is fun if you have the right guy. Like, I almost like watching the lineman run in the 40 yard more than anything.
Rich Eisen.
Most relatable thing we got.
Yeah. That's one of the most fun things is watching a, you know, 40, 50 year old run his 40 time out there. So,
but yeah, as a whole, I could pretty much care less. Like, they're going to tell us what we need to know. Guys like whoever they interviewed longer with, this guy, whatever. I listen to people like you that give me the info I need. I don't need to see a guy jumping up to see how high he can jump vertically, or, you know, shuttleboard and like shuffleboard, whatever the heck they call it. Like, I really don't need, I guess the only other thing is when they have bad quarterbacks throwing on the football. That's always fun. But not a whole lot.
Yeah. I mean, so, I think I like the 40 yard, right? The bench press, I think, is interesting, but I don't see why anyone would do it. It's just not worth it. Especially, I think last year someone tore their biceps doing it. So it's like, come on, like, what are we doing? And there was a lot of drama. I don't know if you saw it, Bub, but they were going to have a bubble like the NBA had for the playoffs a couple of years ago. And the players said, okay, so hold on. So we're going to stop testing for COVID during the playoffs because TV ratings are going crazy. But now during the combine, we're going to be in a bubble again for a week. I don't think so. And every single agent said, my clients will not be going if there's a bubble, all that stuff. I couldn't believe the NFL just went, we concede, we'll get rid of it. And
irony.
I mean, for the NFL to just sit there and go, okay, never mind, is huge. I mean, that's not something that they typically do. So I was very, very surprised by that. But here's what I want to see from the combine. Just in terms of QBs, it's someone standing out, because we had the Shrine Bowl, we had the Senior Bowl, and they said, well, I think the one of the scouts said, I think the guy that had the best week was Matt Corral, because he was the guy that wasn't here, right? So I think we got to get some separation. Over at Fantasy Pros, I did a show with Joe PCP and Andrew Erickson, and we went over all of this earlier in the week. So we talked about a lot in terms of fantasy, but for the quarterback position, one separator. I would love to see one separator. If it's Sam Howell comes out of the process looking great, if it's Malik Willis, who I expected to be, I just think he's kind of built for this type of thing, because he's got a cannon and he's going to run fast. And I think those are going to be the two big things for him. So just getting some separation in this quarterback class. For the running backs, I think it's just finding out who is after the top four. The top four right now seem to be Breece Hall, Isaiah Spiller, Kenneth Walker, and Kyren Williams. And then after that, it's kind of a mix. There's some guys stood out the Shrine Bowl and Senior Bowl that look good, but there's some guys I feel like could easily pass them. So that's what I'm looking at in terms of running backs. Wide receivers, it's we have the top seven. We have a tier of those guys. It's those secondary guys seeing who separates, and that's going to be mainly 40 times. I don't give a crap about the three cone drill. You know why?
Because that's what I was thinking of. Yes, the three cone.
The DK Metcalf ran one of the worst. I think a punter had a better three cone drill than he did. And DK Metcalf's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. So it's a bunch of it's the same thing with measuring the hands, right? Maybe it's because I'm a shorter guy with tiny little hands, but Joe Burrow had smaller hands and just went to the Super Bowl. So I do not give a crap about a guy's
especially they're doing all these drills without pads on. They're playing games with pads. I don't care what they're doing right now.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, just straight line speed is one of those things. That's why I like the 40. For tight ends, we got a bunch of receiving tight ends. So I think guys are going to have to test out in freak levels to really move themselves. So I don't know how much in terms of tight ends we'll have moving. This is not really the drill for offensive and defensive linemen. Maybe we're going to get some that put up a crazy, insane bench press or have a crazy vertical or really, really athletic. I mean, that's what moved Kendrick Green up boards and ended up him being drafted by the Steelers. But if you look at his tape, he's on the goddamn ground every single play. And if you watch his tape with the Steelers, he's one of the worst rated PFF centers in the league because he's on the ground all the time. I don't care how fast he gets to the second level if he can't stand up when Aaron Donald hits him. You know, it doesn't matter. So, but you will see guys move up boards because they test very, very athletically in terms of offensive linemen and interior defensive linemen. I think the edge rushers, it's the second group because, I mean, we have these edge rushers way at the top.
Yeah, they're going early.
Yeah, I mean, these are probably going to be two of the first three picks on the board are Aiden Hutchinson, Kayvon Thibodeau. But then we have David Ojabo, Trayvon Walker, George Karlaftis, Jermaine Johnson. All these guys are first-round talent edge rushers. But you have the next group of the Kingsley Inogbare, Myjai Sanders, Drake Jackson, Cam Thomas, Nick Benito, Arnold Ebikide, Boye Mafe. All these guys, someone is going to separate themselves there. In terms of linebackers, I'm looking for, I'm looking for the guys after the top two, because we have two first round middle linebacker talents in Devin Lloyd and Nakobe Dean. After that, there's just a bunch of discrepancy. I know a lot of people like Leo Chenal from Wisconsin, Darian Beavers from Cincy, Christian Harris from Bama, Damone Clark from LSU. Jojo Doman is a big nickel linebacker type of safety blend player. So is he going to move up boards? Corners. I mean, we have so many good corners in this draft. Derek Stingley is easily the top. Ahmad Gardner, Sauce Gardner, didn't give up a touchdown in his college career.
That's good. I guess
didn't let anyone have more than 13 yards receiving on him this season. So, I mean, you know, playing G5 guy from Cincy, playing a lot of smaller schools.
Still impressive. Like he played some big schools too.
Played Alabama in the playoffs.
Let's not ignore some of these schools they played.
Played Alabama in the playoff. No one at 13.
Notre Dame.
Yeah. I mean, they played some big schools. So it's some big time talent, too. So, you know, he was unbelievably impressive. But it might be getting those guys after Stingley separated because Gardner's 6'2". I don't think he has to run a crazy time because he has height and length, right? Andrew Booth is in this. Trent McDuffie is getting a lot of buzz. Roger McCreary from Auburn. Kyer Elam from Florida is a guy that has seemed to drop. He can boost himself back up with good numbers. So that's what I want. And for safeties, I mean, Kyle Hamilton is going to be your first safety off the board out of Notre Dame. And then after that, it's a big question mark of who is going to be the second safety. Going into the process, there was Jaquan Brisker from Penn State was kind of the number two. But after the Senior Bowl, Jalen Petrie looked awesome during that. And he played a star position at Baylor, which kind of moves him all around the field. He played some corners, some linebackers, some safety, all over the place. So if he puts up good numbers plus the good Senior Bowl, he's just going to gain momentum going into his pro day and then eventually the NFL draft. So there's a lot to gain from the combine. We're going to get tons of knowledge. There's not going to be much from the combine that moves me off of my rankings. I wait to rank until after the combine, because I like to use all of the information, of course, to rank these guys. But, I don't know. It hurts guys.
What's a player got to do to move for you? Like, you've watched so much film on these guys. You've watched them through college. It's like a one-time deal. Anything could have been different. What's a guy got to do to, like, are you going to Al Davis and go, oh my God, he's faster than I thought. Like,
yeah, well, that's a big thing too. Like, if you know a guy is fast and he runs a fast time, don't count it twice. You already knew he was fast, right? So what are you doing counting this twice? You know, so for me, it's more of these guys that are length guys, you know, like Christian Watson is 6'4", Drake London, 6'5". Drake London's not going to run. He might run at his pro day, but, you know, these guys that have a lot of size, if they run the same type of numbers, you know, they're in the 4.4s with all these smaller guys. Okay, that stands out a little bit because you knew he was big, but now you know he's big and fast. It's little things. And honestly, to me, it's less about the things that I see because I don't have if you measure in at this height, I'm not going to put you on my board. If you don't have this size hands or this three cone, any of that crap, I don't do any of that stuff. That's dumb to me. I wouldn't take anyone off my board because of a number.
Do you care more about the combine or a pro day?
Oh, combine. Pro days are heavily home.
They're scripted.
You have home field advantage, right?
Okay, I'm thinking it's fine.
Yeah, because
a lot of guys are switching to that, it feels like. So, like, they're sitting there going, yeah, I don't know. Like, if they're comfortable with who they are, like, I don't really want to go to the combine. We're going to go over here and just kind of do this thing.
Right. And those numbers are taken less seriously as well from pro days because, you know, you get a little home cooking. You're in your home gym. You're on your home field. You have your home people measuring your times, receivers
catching for you,
your own quarterback throwing to you, or guys that you practice with a lot of times. Yeah. It's not always like that at pro days because there's a lot of guys from small schools that'll go to like the Oklahoma pro day, right? And they'll just show up to test. It's not their home field, but it's a lot of times you get some home cooking. It's like when JJ Arcega Whiteside ran a 4.39 or something at home. You're like, this dude is 6'6 and plotting. There is not a chance on my life he ran a 4.39. And obviously he didn't. He got a little buzz and Philly bit, but Philly has been great with wide receivers. They also took Jalen Reagor. Henry Ruggs had college. More yards than Jalen Reagor did this year, and he spent half of his season in prison. So, not all.
Maybe it's the quarterback. Devontae Smith didn't have the.
Devontae Smith is good. That was a hard one to screw up. Yeah. But look, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will finish out the 3-hour tour of In This League on the Sports Grid. So stick with us. We'll be right back after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
In this league.
I thought we were going to be just friends.
What? Friends? Listen to
In this league.
In the dark.
Welcome back, everybody. You hear Endless Love. You know what that means. It's the end of the three-hour tour in this league. On the Sports Grid, please check out our Patreon, patreon.com/ITLArmy, and this league. Route you there. Like I said before, group me rooms, secret shows, live streams, rankings, all kinds of great stuff over there. And the group me rooms are worth it. I mean, you know, it's a great community. You drop an idea in there, you're going to get responses. So please check that out. If you would, follow us all on Twitter at Bogman Sports, at BDentric, and at Is It The Welsh. Bub, we just talked about the scouting combine. It's not our favorite thing in the world, of course, underwear Olympics, but is there a moment or is there like a 40 time or a bench press or anything that you remember being wowed at by during the combine?
Well, if you wanted a good chuckle, you could always go back to the good old Kansas City Chiefs lineman falling down and showing the world how good he measures.
That was Chris Jones, man. Yeah. That's the best measurement that's ever been taken. Good
Let's
Lord.
Just say, yeah, it's one of the best, the first moments that always pops into my head. So it tells you everything you know about how much I care about the combine. He was not a part of the underwear Olympics because I don't think he's wearing any underwear. Oof. But it's tough. Like, I think for me, some of the, like, the one event I guess I look forward to the most is hearing how dumb some of these guys are with the Wonderlic test.
They got rid of the Wonderlic.
I know, but that's like the bummer of it because it was a BS test to begin with.
I mean, those guys also didn't take it seriously. They were just filling D for all of them and then handing it.
Like, the test had nothing to do with if they were getting paid millions of dollars or not. Like, that, no professional team cares that much about that. Like, come on. But it was always funny seeing, like, some of the scores that came out of there. And then he had, like, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick acing the test. And it was like, nerd. But
he went to Harvard.
He has to. Otherwise, he loses his scholarship.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't know. Really, like, there's really nothing that stands out to me at the combine. I used to watch it a lot when I was younger. I'll say that much, but it's probably been a good handful of years before I've even cared about watching it at all.
I mean, the Maurice Claret running the horrible 40 time, I think was funny. But yeah, man, it's, to me, it's the weird questions and the interviews. I pay more attention to the interviews. That's how I read, you know, the year before Ja'Marr Chase came out, that they asked corners at the combine, who was the hardest guy you ever guarded? And all of them said Ja'Marr Chase, except for Jeff Okuda said Quintez Cephas, you know, which was weird. But that's the kind of info I'm looking forward to. But we got to go. We will see you guys next week. Have a good one, everyone, and enjoy the combine. We will see you. Take it easy.